Hey, it's Melvin, one of your friendly neighborhood podcast hosts. Whether it's your first time tuning in or you're a longtime listener, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. Reviews are the lifeblood of the podcast world, so if you want to help us out, it'll take only a moment of your time. Otherwise, we hope you enjoy the show. You're listening to Cinematic Doctrine. Hey, if you just press play, we keep doing this, man. We are unhinged, but we just did another 50 minutes of talking about a subject matter. And this one in particular was just really exciting because both of us are pretty passionate about physical media. I have become more passionate about it as we podcasted together and things like that. I think there was a time where I was less interested in this, but we talk about physical media, kind of something we just decided after the HBO Max news where David Zaslav just removed original content for HBO Max from the service, which I watched Moonshot. It was quite nice. It was a sweet movie. I really enjoyed it. It's still available on Vudu, so you can check it out. But we talked about special features, curation. We talked about stuff like Scream Factory 101, Arrow, Criterion, all that stuff. Even older ones like Vista, I briefly mentioned, as both of us own a copy of Unbreakable for that. And just how cool these things are. They add history. They add stuff like that. You can hear 50 minutes of us talking about various special features and stuff like that and the importance of it. And why going to thrift stores is really exciting. By supporting on Patreon for $3 a month. That is the minimum. You can obviously do more. $3 a month gets you access to these early segments of each episode. Pretty much every episode at this point since we returned. So Texas Chainsaw onward, maybe a little after. We've been doing stuff like this with all kinds of topics. With Nope, it was talking about movies that we kind of regret or feel aren't useful to us anymore, even within our own memory banks. And so it's pretty exciting stuff. $3 a month. You can always choose. You can also choose what we review at the end of each month. As of right now, The Bear is probably what we'll be reviewing at the end of the month. The new Hulu show, or I'm sure it's some other channel, but it's on Hulu. So it's the new Hulu show, the restaurant one. So it's pretty exciting. And if we reach certain tiers, we'll do different reviews. One for Inhumans, one for Gods Not Dead, stuff like that, which are pretty exciting to have as milestones. So yeah, $3 a month. Check it out. But we are here to talk about... Well, not okay. We were going to do Not Okay, but Prey has been huge, and both Dan and I have actually watched that one. So we are here to talk about Prey, with Not Okay being next week, which means we'll be talking about Hulu a lot this month, now that I realize.
Look at Hulu, man.
I know. And frankly, Hulu's been putting out good movies. I mean, The Princess, I enjoyed. It's silly. It's stupid. It is direct-to-video borderline, but it is pretty fun. And so Hulu's got some great stuff right now. So while Lightyear is being released on Disney, reminding everybody that Pixar put that in theaters and not Turning Red, Hulu is getting some good stuff, but also kind of has the same syndrome because Prey is on Hulu and not in theaters, which we'll talk about. Dan, do you want to go ahead and introduce Prey?
Prey is a 2002 American science fiction horror action film. I love that about the Predator franchise and that all of the films kind of cover a wide range of genres. It is directed by Dan Trachtenberg, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and is written by Patrick Aysen from a story from Trachtenberg and Aysen. Of course, it is based on the Predator characters created by Jim and John Thomas. It is the, depending on how you count it, it is the roughly the fifth film in the main Predator franchise, about seventh or eighth overall, counting the Alien vs. Predator films. It is an original story. It was kind of in development around the same time as Shane Black's The Predator was in development. However, this one takes a much different approach. Initially under the production title of Skulls, Prey is about a Naru, a young Comanche warrior who is trained in healing and tracking but wishes to be a hunter. Her older brother is an accomplished hunter. And however, it becomes very apparent very quickly that there is some new predator, wink, wink, working in the woods nearby, and along the way, lots of people get killed, and they run into some unexpected other people. It is a rather straightforward film. The movie wastes no time establishing that the Predator is a presence in the film, yet they do a great job of kind of keeping him in the shadows until it's appropriate for him to really come out and start just absolutely wrecking everyone in his path. There is a rather slim cast of characters, however, everyone on display really plays the role quite well. Of course, the standout is Amber Midthunder as Naru. Some of you will know her as she will be in the new Avatar Last Airbender live action series for Netflix. She is a clear standout here as she is both plays very vulnerable, but also is a fierce warrior at the same time. There's a new person under the Predator mask, Dane DeLegro, who I believe is an NBA basketball player, does a great job as a titular beast. I am a huge fan of the Predator franchise. I love the Predator monster. I have said it before. Great movie monsters are ones that have clear strengths and clear weaknesses. The Predator, since the OG film with Arnold Schwarzenegger, has a very long, known weakness to not being able to see things if they are not picked up on his heat signature. He also is a bit one-minded in task. However, to a group of trained hunters, you know, he actually has his work cut out for him a little bit. And so they do a great job of establishing everyone's strengths and weaknesses. They do a great job of building up to the end confrontation between our main character and the Predator, where Naru slowly and surely just keeps observing and learning new things about this creature on loose. There is some great gore effects. There are some great kills. The Predator is treated as a menacing being. He's not played for comedy or silly. You know, Busta Rhymes doesn't hit him with a shovel like Michael Myers does. but at the same time, they do put a fresh spin on this franchise. I did not see Shane Black's Predator, as I heard it was terrible.
Yes.
Predator is one of those franchises that people talk about, like there's not a lot of great movies in it. I just feel in the minority. I love the original. I think the original is one of the best science fiction films of the time. I think some of the best Arnold Schwarzenegger films of the time. I like Predator 2, and I thought Predators was great. I don't know why people had a problem with that. So I personally am quite satisfied with the franchise. I do think this towers over most of them. It is the best since the original, which I'm sure you've heard about a lot of franchise type things, but it is great in a complete diametrical opposite way. The original Predator, you have a great cast of big burly action stars coming together to fight a monster as they all get picked off one by one. Prey, you have one girl with a tomahawk going after a predator, and both are equally as exciting and visceral, and it's just great. Prey is a wonderful entry in the franchise. It's a great science fiction film. It's a great monster movie. It's a great action film. I really, really enjoyed this movie quite a bit. It's only 90 minutes, so just go on Hulu right goodness. Now and watch yes. it.
It's great.
Meanwhile, it's a shame
Bullet Train is 2 hours. Did you know Bullet Train is 2 hours?
I did not know.
it's not, over, actually.
Not the fastest
minutes.
Train ride.
Yeah.
so
For a movie called Prey, there sure were a lot of predators. Let's just bring up some more bad jokes. What's another movie in it's theaters right now?
Lightyear.
More like Woke Year. I stole that one from my wife, actually. She made that one, but I'm sure someone else said
stole
it
that one.
I stole that one.
It is a shame that Prey did not hit the theaters. This is tailor-made for a theater experience.
My goodness.
It's a real shame.
Yes.
So, I am pleasantly surprised to see how much everyone else seems to like it, as it's a really small film, all things considered. You got one monster, and you have like five or six people fighting the monster, and most of them die pretty quickly. So it's a 1v1 battle for most of the film. I guess, and I hope this helps dispel the rumor. I know I'm kind of going along, but I hope this kind of dispels the sense that every big, quote-unquote, like franchise blockbuster-type movie needs to be some really blown out of proportions, big action and like events. Prey is getting, and there's an argument to be made that part of why it's getting such a positive response is because it's sort of a surprise hit on streaming as opposed to something they spent money marketing and all that stuff. But this is, people really like this. It's a pretty self-contained story about one person fighting a monster. Like, this movie works just as well if you take the Predator out of it and replace it with a more generic monster. Obviously it lacks some of the prestige, and there is one Easter egg-y kind of thing that ties it to the rest of the franchise, which is kind of fun. But again, that's something that only you pick up on if you're like a fan of the Predator franchise.
Hey there, it's your friendly neighborhood call to action. Just checking in on you. Hope you're doing all right. I'm just stopping by to say, you know, if you enjoy the show, you can always subscribe and write a review for Cinematic Doctrine. There's iTunes, Podchaser, basically anywhere you listen. You can give us a shout out with a thumbs up, 5 stars, gripping positivity. Or if you hate the show, you can say that too.
Wait, what? What are you saying? Why are you saying that?
Well, I'm not going to tell them what to do, Ted. They're free to do what they want. Our analytics say we got a lot of listeners in the US, and you know they love their freedoms. And you're also free to check out our Twitter. Very active there. We host polls,
memes. There's also the Cinematic Doctrine Facebook group called Cinematic Doctrine Facebook Group. If you want to join, just answer the questions, read the rules, and tell them the podcast sent you. Also, you should check out our website. Some really cool stuff there. Editorials, written reviews for movies we haven't had time to cover. Always check out cinematicdoctrine.com when you get the chance. Ted also told me I shouldn't forget to mention the Patreon. Something about you can support us or something?
Wait, Ted, I thought this was like a hobby thing. You want me to
expand Cinematic Doctrine. You know
right,
this already.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I forgot. I'm the one who put all this together. Yeah, Cinematic Doctrine has a Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you can gain access to early uncut episodes of the podcast. Oh, and did I mention, you get to tell us what to do. That's right, each month you get to vote on a movie we discuss on the show. Anyways, I gotta run, so I'll see you guys later.
I think, like, Melvin, what did you think of Prey?
Well, I am going to evoke a Letterboxd review from Jacob Knight where his first sentence, I won't even evoke it, I'll just read it. He just says, cleans the franchise up after the over-busy clunkiness of Shane Black's entry by reducing the logline and in turn the iconic Alien Beast to its pro-wrestler essence, which is true. Yep,
like, that's that very is, true.
Like, part of the first one isn't entirely that. The first one is more of a hidden monster movie with a really cool aesthetic. It's very much more The Most Dangerous Game, but his actual aesthetic as a figure feels like a pro wrestler. You after you've watched the first movie, you go, oh yeah, I want to see Predator against the Alien, because that's how you think about it. And then you get that movie, and it's kind of a fun popcorny movie. I think Alien versus Predator is frankly better than most people feel about it, just because it is
I really don't like that movie.
Really?
It's so disappointing to me. Like,
it is not very good, because it's like, it could be a lot more fun.
It makes all the wrong decisions.
But like it is, I was going to say, this is why I think it's good, because it is the perfect I am doing laundry and it's on the Sci-Fi Channel right now movie. It is so,
if that's the metric you're using.
Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do.
When they're done playing reruns of Warehouse 13, when AVP 2 comes on, it's like, okay.
Well, the second one, I don't know. I own it. I haven't watched it yet. I've heard it's too dark to actually see. So,
yes.
Like,
I had that problem with Alien vs. Predator 1, right? I felt like I actually couldn't see a lot of the fight scenes.
Like the Solo movie.
Yeah, well, then I heard it's worse than the second one. I was like, well, then why even bother? Like,
yeah, I want to watch the second one, and I just want to turn the brightness up to when I do. But but all that to say is, like, everybody in their right mind saw the first Predator movie and started creating death matches. And that's why you have Batman versus Predator, and that's why you have Batman versus Alien, actually. But
and Archie versus Predator.
Yeah, you have all these really, really silly, cool ideas, because, like, it's just, that's what he is. He's got a tool belt. He's got gadgets. He's got ways of winning. Arguably, it's unfair that he's cloaked all the time. But you know what? All creatures have cloaking devices except for basically people. So I get it. It's fair. People have opposable thumbs. I guess that's just what you get. But this movie does that, where at first I was like, okay, we're going to see him, like, oh, I get it. There's a rat and now a snake and he kills us. And I was like, oh no, this is cool. Like, he's defeating the predators, moving up the tier list. It's like when you play like Soul Calibur, getting to the final fight. He fights the wolf and it's a cool fight sequence, even though it's super quick, because the way he fights the wolf, he crouches down as if to get on its level. And it frankly doesn't matter that he's cloaked, because the wolf could just tell that he's there anyway. And so, like, there's such cool stuff going on. I also am a big fan of movies where the lead antagonist is not the only threatening obstacle. So there's a horribly terrifying sequence with a mud pit that is just horrible. And like, and that alone is exciting, to have other things be in the way of our protagonist that can also be brought up again later, where this film has a ton of Chekhov's guns, where everything that has become an obstacle becomes something beneficial, either to the protagonist or even to the predator. Need I mention that a bear trap isn't just a bear trap, but used as a weapon by the predator in one of the coolest kills, of which this film has many. All tailor-made for a theater experience, where I could have heard a theater in a Dolby screening just hype about this movie, and like I just didn't get to have that entirely. I did go to a friend's house to watch this, which was fun to watch a streaming movie that released on streaming, not just at home by myself or with my wife, like to actually be like at church. And I was like talking to a friend, like, yeah, I haven't watched it yet. Me neither. Let's watch it together. Cool. And that's exciting. But this movie, I guess I'm pivoting now to this, but why is this not in theaters? Why is this not in theaters? Why was Shane Black's horrible movie in theaters, but this was not? I mean, I even saw that in IMAX. It was one of the final movies I saw in IMAX. I just cannot understand it, because that movie is ridiculously stupid and like borderline offensive. And a lot of people have actually made plenty of good essays or written write-ups on how that movie actually is pretty offensive and like just a weird movie in the franchise, because Predator is just simple. And since Predator 1, and I think this is why, now I'll just talk about the franchise, but as I'm just jumping across different things, this is like a spider web here, but like Predator as a franchise just gets overly complicated after the first, in my opinion. It's probably why Predators, out of all of the sequels before Prey, feels good, because Predators is just simple. It's just the Predator film, but in reverse, where it's, we collected a bunch of Predators and put them on a planet to fight. But even then, it like has this weird,
and it's like all the people that weren't in the Expendables movie, which is filming at the same time. So it's like,
yeah.
It's like, but it's, man, if you have not seen Predators, I'm just going to say Mahershala Ali, Danny Trejo, Oleg Taktarov,
Lawrence Fishburne,
Adrian Brody. Like, it's a great cast of like character actors. Walton Goggins. All fighting predators on a predator planet. It's great.
And it's pretty cool. Like, it's a cool movie. I did not dislike that one. Two is weak. The Predator is way worse than all of them, but it is kind of fascinating as like a touchstone of existing. I don't know if you, do you know about that movie? Do you know like the movie for the Predator? Do you know the plot line for that one?
No, I was so like, at first I was like, oh, Shane Black, I'm in. Like, I love Shane Black. I've liked every movie he's worked on. And then I heard it was really bad, and like I heard it was really bad, like not worth checking out even as like a joke. So I purposely didn't avoid learning anything about it, because I was like, oh, I don't need to learn anything about it. It's a new Predator movie from Shane Black. I'm in. And then when I heard it was bad, I just was like, okay. So I stopped. So I managed on both ends and both ends of the spectrum, just ignoring information about it.
Before the end of the year,
I know Thomas Jane is in it as someone with Tourette's. That's all I know.
Before the end of the year, please watch it so that for a Patreon discussion, we can talk about it. Because it is, I think if you really don't know anything about it, anything at all about this plot line, I think you'll be just like shocked. It'll shock you. It won't offend you. I think you'll just be like, what in the world? Because like, it's a Hollywood movie. It's not like a fan thing. Like, Batman versus Predator made by fans makes sense. The Predator does
Batman
not,
Dead End. You can watch it online right now. Check it out.
It, but like as an actual thing, it doesn't make any sense. It is. Yeah, you will be like on that Patreon support thing where we were like, let's do shocking movies, Man of Steel or Tickled. Like, I could have put the Predator on it. Like, it is in that vein of like mind blowing. And granted, I found the movie funny. I even am shocked looking back at my Predators. The Predator review on Letterboxd is still like a 5 out of 10.
Can we talk about how this is like the worst numbered franchise in the history of the world? It starts off on Predator 2. All right, we're good. Predators. Then Alien versus Predator. Alien versus Predator 2. Then The Predator. And now Prey. Like, it's every jokey bad naming convention all shoved into one franchise. It's incredible. Bad.
It's really terrible.
I will say,
but at least Prey is clever, and the rest of the movie is clever.
We haven't talked much about the movie, but I will say
that's the franchise. Like, part of what makes this movie excellent is the franchise it's in.
It stands out so much for the rest of the franchise. Like, you were correct in that there's a wrestler logic to the Predator, but he has the best motivation of any movie monster, which is, he just wants to find really cool things to hunt and fight.
It's the Dragon Ball thing.
It's like, Dragon Ball
is cool because Goku just likes fighting people to the detriment of other characters. Like, the Cell games, Gohan is getting beat up by Cell, could die, and Goku's just like there, and Vegeta's like, what are you doing? Like, that is your son. Piccolo's like, that's my son. Like, it's like, and so then finally Goku's like, oh yeah, that's right. And so like, there are times when Goku lets people, he like gives a senzu bead to one of the villains because he's like, I want to fight you at your best. Like that. And like, you're like, cool. Like that is cool.
It's one of those, he's one of those crossover characters that actually makes complete sense. Like it makes sense that the Predator would go to Gotham, man, oh man, all the different other predators and prey in Gotham. And that he would tangle with Batman. That makes 110% sense for the character.
If the Predator earned multiverse abilities, like he would just be like,
yeah, he kills America Chavez and absorbs her abilities, then man, we're in trouble. Like,
what a pivot. What if that would be crazy. I guess that's the word for me today because I said it like 12 times, but like the end of Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, the Predator just shows
Disney
up.
Owns this franchise. They could do
that. I know.
That.
They
that's
can, why
not?
It's
on Hulu.
Be cool.
It's the weakness of their thing of like, well, Predator isn't really, you know, our kind of thing. So, you know, so they dump it on Hulu.
But Ready or Not is. That's why we put Ready or Not in theaters. That's where the movie. Devil is a character who's real in that
canonically,
universe.
The devil is there.
And two children who are horribly evil children also explode into blood
they
off screen.
Explode.
They run behind a door so you don't see it, and then boom, it explodes. It's okay, like Freddy got fingered. It's so silly.
Ugh.
But that is in a Disney owned property movie.
But all of this nonsense we're talking about, like all the stuff where he fights Danny Glover in New York, there's a Predator planet and they're fighting Topher Grace. Like all of that is wisely jettisoned to the side, and they take the character back to its roots where it's just, he's just looking for hunting. And in playing with the continuity as exists, it is confirmed repeatedly throughout other films that the Predators have visited Earth multiple times. So they do it throughout history, which right there, that's a franchise. I want to see Predator fight medieval knights. I want to see the Predator fight samurai and ninjas. Yes. I want to see the Predator on a giant pirate ship just fighting a bunch of pirates. Like, let's go. Send him to the future where he fights like space people, whatever. But
Predator, prey, pirate. That's the next one. Cool.
Eat, why prey, not? Predator. It's right there. So
for the cool moms out there,
That's a wonderful decision because A, it really helps amplify the character strengths. The Predator is methodical. He's there for the hunt. He is there for the sport of it. He's a character that actually has honor. And so that comes up in both Predator 2 and Predators, where the Predator, at least one of them, gains a respect for the human character. That's what happens in Alien vs. Predator 2, actually, where he gains respect for the human character. And because they've battled together, very macho logic, you know. And so here he's just unleashed into just the woods. So he fights a snake. He fights a bear, you know, which is awesome.
It's a great scene. That was awesome. But super cool.
Simultaneous to this, we have this character whose name is Naru.
Naru.
Who very quickly, they set up everything new about the character. She wants to be a hunter. She's not very good at it. Plus gender norms of the time. Everyone's like, you should go home and cook. And but she also, as part of Rite Passage, you get your big first kill. She thinks she sees a Thunderbird, which I appreciate that shout out as a cryptid fan. And of course, it's not a Thunderbird. It's the freaking Predator, man. He's coming. Yeah. And so she tries to help out her brother, and they're on the hunt, and no one believes in her. But because she's a tracker and she pays attention, she notices very quickly that something is very off about what's going on. And all of her strong-headed siblings and brothers and whatever all are dismissive of her. And the movie doesn't drag any of this out too long. Like, they very quickly kind of start getting rid of other characters. Very soon, there's a situation where she points out to everyone, hey, there's a Predator. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you are correct. There is a Predator.
Yeah, good
and
scene.
They all are like, oh, they decided to fight him because they're
that's
cool
what
dudes.
You do.
What else can you do? And so, obviously, this is her big kill that's going to prove her worth to her tribe. However, she is not strong like everyone else. She is not as adept with weapons as everyone else. She is a tracker and a healer, but she is smart and she's picking up on things. And so in the middle of the movie, there's a scene where a bunch of French hunters show up and capture her because they're trying to hunt the Predator as well. And you're
which
thinking,
is cool.
Awesome. Predator's going to kill a bunch of dudes with guns. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And they all have flintlock weapons, and there's a great scene where they all shoot, and then there's a moment of pause, and they'll quickly try to reload their like flintlock weapons, which is, you know, the humor in this movie is quite dark. And first off, awesome. You can see Predator fight people with flintlock pistols. I'm all about it. And he's just eviscerating people very violently. He opens up a shield and beheads someone with it and cuts down a tree. Lots of great kills. Again, in a theater this would have been great. People would have been shouting and freaking out.
They'd go multiple times. They take their friends. This really would sell tickets.
You gotta see it. Like, I've seen people online saying they've already watched the movie two or three times. Granted, again, it's because it's right there on Hulu. They can watch it. But I appreciate that. Like, they really build up both characters magnificently for the whole film, where you have a terrifying, a nonstop killing machine that is just eviscerating everyone in his path, and you have another character that constantly is losing, quote unquote. Like, she constantly fails to kill the creature. She fails to save her brother. She fails to do all these other things. Yet she learns a little bit over and over again. And then it has this great scene where she uses the evil French guy who is picking on her and captured her as bait. And she has this quick little monologue talking about how the reason that she is actually dangerous as a hunter is because no one thinks she's a good hunter. And she has learned that by lowering her body temperature, the predator can't see her. And she uses some of the herbs that she'd be using because she's a healer to lower her body temperature. And the predator just horribly murders the guy in front of her, where she then shoots the predator in the head and steals his mask, which she noticed that that's how he targets things. And so it leads up into a big final fight, which is great. And it's a really lean, quick movie. This movie is the exact same length as Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage. Yet it doesn't feel half the length.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot more cool stuff happens. And it's just such a wonderful, straightforward action, horror, science fiction movie.
High concept, even. I mean, it's like, because there's not a lot of high concept
movies
anymore. It's
a Comanche warrior versus an alien creature. That's a fun movie premise.
That's how you pitched it. Yeah, it's so simple. This will be a bit of an aside, but one of my criticisms of a game like Dead by Daylight is all of the human characters, they're taken into this world, the entity realm. But they're all taken from the years of like 2006 to 2022. And I'm like, you're telling me the entity realm only takes like millennials and zoomers? Like, it should be taking people like, why is one of my characters not a pirate? Why is one of my characters not a like a Roman soldier? Why is one of my characters not an Egyptian? Like, all like a for building like the pyramids kind of thing. All these really interesting ideas. All of the killers are kind of varied and have stuff like that. Like, they have, they introduce a character called the Plague who is like an Egyptian goddess, but then like the subsequent character is just like a teenager. And it's just like, okay, that's really stupid. And there's sort of like this weird thing where I think a lot of science fiction kind of gets so stuck in being forward science fiction that it doesn't take advantage of being like backward science fiction. I mean, even one of the most popular shows right now is a show called, I think, Outlander, but it's just an isekai, a mom style isekai where a woman from now gets taken back to like colonial times, something like that. And so they're still trying to have the audience insert style character. But like, this doesn't have that. It's just character, it's just the other time period. And like, yeah, you could like understand some light motivations of like, you're a woman suppressed wanting to become like chieftain, whatever, but like I it's kind of just crazy to me that this movie exists at all, even like on every level, even down to the fact that it's on Hulu and not in theaters, which is really frustrating, because it just doesn't seem like the kind of movie anybody would say yes to, especially when the whole franchise was continuing towards like the Predator was supposed to be like the beginning of like, I think, a trilogy. And even I told you to watch it without knowing anything, but like even the ending implied it was supposed to have like Arnold Schwarzenegger show up, and like, he just didn't want to be in the movie.
Yeah. I read about, there was also a scrapped ending where Ellen Ripley was supposed to show up.
Okay, that's really well, they dodge bullets there, but like, it's just like, this is a complete different direction to do. And like, I tried to look up the budget, couldn't find it on IMDb, but like,
fact that also this was pitched and began production while the Predator was also in production is really surprising to me. Like, it does speak to something that was nice about having another big studio around, where 20th Century Fox, where somebody, because the person who's the producer, John Davis, not the guy from Korn, he has been a producer on every Predator film. And so the fact that he heard this pitch from Asen and Trachtenberg and was just like, that sounds great, and like went with it while this other movie was in production, shows that like you had somebody at the helm who likes this franchise, likes these characters. Also, another interesting thing is apparently initially they did not want it to be known in marketing that this was a Predator film. They wanted to initially market it as just like a horror film about a Comanche warrior fighting an unknown entity. Imagine how bonkers that theater experience would be if you went and you're sitting in your seat and slowly realized that it was a predator.
Which would have been fighting. Pretty hype. I do think that would have affected marketing, but it would have been a really cool experience.
I wonder if it had worked, because that's my big, like, because if enough people saw it opening weekend, like if it had like a really good reviews, right? And then maybe a few like nerdy sites leaked it. And so you had a couple people going to theater knowing what was going on, but the wide audiences didn't. You might have been able to generate word of mouth where in subsequent weeks, people have been like, you got to see that movie, Prey. Like, I'm not going to tell you anything about it. Just trust me. You got to see it, you know? And you're like, okay. And you put it mentally next to a cabin in the woods or whatever. And all these other movies that, and Don't Breathe, where you're just like, okay, yeah, I'll see you later. I wonder if that would work. I mean, it'd be very hard to keep that under wraps that this movie had the Predator in it, but it's a nice thought experiment too. Like, think of other movies. Like, because what this movie really also shows is you could just improve a lot of movies just by adding a Predator to it somewhere. Where
probably,
like,
yeah.
Like, I like it. Like, this is just a general monster movie that they just dropped the Predator into. That's a great pitch. And I hope that this is the direction they take it in. Because if this movie's successful enough, there should be sequels to this. Like, there is no reason you can't make a Prey 2 where it's just Predator versus some other ancient warrior or ancient, like, imagine an ancient samurai. Because you have an interesting other, like, where it's a predator versus a culture in a way, right? Because this movie is a predator versus a hunter-gatherer culture.
That's kind of a cool, empowering cultural thing,
right?
You could have, like, different cultures can showcase their stuff. So, like, for instance, Amber Midthunder, she actually has a piece about her on New York Times. And she was talking about how she liked that this particular depiction of Native Americans wasn't just, like, shamanistic spiritualism.
Yeah, they're good at hunting.
They're just people, you know? Like, they're just trying to live. As the mom says, we're doing this to survive. Like, not to, like, this isn't just like something cool to do. Like, this is
they hunt because they need to eat food.
This is objectively bad that we have to suffer through all this. So do your best. But there's, so with that in mind, like taking it to like a samurai version. The second you said it, was like, dude, like, awesome. I really want to watch that.
Well,
or like ninjas.
It reminds
like,
me of that scene.
So cool.
Because I don't know if you remember in Predators, he has that scene where the Predator just sword fights with a guy who is versed in kendo.
Yeah.
And the Predator agrees to the rules of the fight. They stand apart from each other. And that's the moment I fell in love with that movie, because the Predator is agreeing to the rules of Bushido for a moment. And it's awesome, you know?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't fight unfair in this one. Fights pretty fairly.
If someone's injured or like if they're tied up, he won't go for them, because that's not why he's there.
Right.
He's a monster. He's a sentient creature with rules, and he has a goal. And that's part of why I love this character so much, because like Jason Voorhees, he's a fun character and he has some logic, but it's very like, it's very simplistic. You know,
it's also Arrested Development. It's like, it's all the fact that he's like, still 6 years old and mad that his mom died. You know, so
it's because it's like Predator is up there for me with like someone like Pinhead, right? Where there is a level where you can reason with him. Like
Pinhead is completely reasoned with in the first one. It's like kind of crazy.
And like, we need more movie.
You open the box.
You know, like so monster cool. figures. I feel like they're like, this is the direction that I want the franchise to go. Cause again, like the trap they keep falling into is we have a hit movie, we have a known IP, bigger better. Like, that's what Predator 2
that's what Zaslav wants with the entire DC properties.
Yeah, we're gonna make
bigger, better.
Batman, Wonder Woman, you know.
Joker made $1 billion, but we gotta spend $300 million.
Well, no. That's a movie that'd be ruined by money if they really inflate the budget. Like, Joker 2 to me sounds like it'll work more as a contained, the movie only being in Arkham Asylum, as I've heard rumors of, that sounds appealing to me. I don't want a movie where he fights Batman, quite as weird as that is to sound. Like, that's not what I want out of sequel to that particular movie. And like, I know the Predator is a big movie monster with a lot of crossover appeal, but he is so much more interesting if you put him in like a movie where, like, what if Predator shows up during World War II? You know, what if you're fighting a bunch of Nazis and then Predator shows up and kills all Nazis and now you have
that's
a big
cool.
problem?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what if he sinks a Titanic? Let's think big, people. Like, there's a lot, you know. Get DiCaprio on the phone. He'll do it.
Yeah, World War II would be pretty cool. Or World War I. He comes on, what is it, Christmas Day when they all played soccer and they all have to work together.
That's why they work together. Yes.
That'd be so cool.
Oh, man. Are you listening? You listen to Bob Iger. Like,
come on, Trachtenberg. You don't really do movies. You only do them like once every 6 years.
to give it away, my recommendation is going to be his other film he directed, because he has a particular skill taking movies that are sequels that should not work for any reason and making them great, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and Predator has been a franchise that struggled for so long, and it's so like you have a likable protagonist that you want to root for, who is treated with like, and yeah, the I think there's specific Comanche culture, the little bit that's here is treated with respect and reverence, and they highlight their strengths, and the Predator both works as sort of like, you know, a coming impending force, that, you know, I'm sure to parallel real history, that is kind of what happened, is eventually other people showed up and wrecked them up. And the post credits of this, like, you see cave paintings that imply that other Predator ships showed up. And perhaps that is what happened, that befell the Comanche tribe in this universe. And everyone, it's like you strip everything from all the dumb franchise stuff is stripped out, and you just focus on what really works, which is Predator is awesome and scary. And watching a human character overcome him is compelling every single time. It's great when Arnold Schwarzenegger does it in the first movie. It is weird when Danny Glover does it in the second movie. And it's
awesome.
Afraid
of heights.
Yeah. Very weird. And it's cool when what's her name and Adrian Brody are able to match wits with them in Predators, you know? So this is great. See it. Revisit the other Predator films. I think some of them age well. I think there's a thing where we're growing also in appreciation of older, what were thought of as blockbusters at the time, that we look back on them now and appreciate that they were allowed to be weird and kind of off base, and people spent money on things maybe they shouldn't, but we got things that are kind of more interesting out of them. I can't think of them. Like, people rag on Predator 2, but is there another movie like Predator 2 where the Predator kills gangsters and skins them and leaves them in a warehouse? Like, that doesn't happen in lots of movies these days, you know? Back in my day, that happened every week, but now not so much, so... I don't know if you had any further thoughts on Prey.
You kind of alluded to this earlier, but like, and we talked about this in, I can't remember the specific episode, but there's a current fascination with simple movies right now that I think people are really enjoying. And
Top Gun Maverick was the third highest grossing movie this month. Like, still.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, apart from Everything Everywhere, which continues to get re-released in theaters and is continuing to still be the word of mouth juggernaut that it is. And I think because it's still so popular, it actually has Oscar contention as a contender, because most movies like this wouldn't even get mentioned. There's still like something really people love about these simple movies lately. I mean, the beginning of the year started with Scream, and it doesn't get more simple than that. Like, that is just guy dresses up and basically falls over all the time, but he still kills you. And that's super simple. So it's not even a complicated slasher movie. We talked about Kimmy earlier this year. We didn't do an episode on it, but I talked about Kimmy and how much I really enjoyed that one. And that is super, super simple movie. I'm trying to think. Turning Red is quite simple, frankly. And that's not super overwhelming. Sonic 2 killed it in theaters. Like, that was fine. Nope is a super simple movie. And complicated in the sense that it's like, is it a horror movie? Yeah, whatever. But that's simple. I'm just like scrolling down my list of movies I watched where like even the movies that didn't do well this year are things like, this is a no-brainer, but Jurassic World Dominion is a mess for many reasons, but it's still a big blockbuster movie that is bad, but that's a mess. We haven't even mentioned The Gray Man, but that is just terrible, terrible movie. Really, really terrible. And no one, I don't know anybody who likes it, and I don't hear anyone even talking about it, but like, it is really, really terrible. And that's even being was initially pioneered to be like a Netflix equivalent of a James Bond style franchise. There's already even a sequel listed for that, jokingly called either the English way of spelling Gray, the Gray Man, or the Grayer Man, which I think is pretty
gray
funny.
Men.
Gray Man. Yeah, I didn't see that one yet. That's good. But like even Hollywood Stargirl, that Stargirl sequel that like no one really, really asked for or cared about, but people appreciate it because it's very simple. And just like people are saying it's better. I thought it was okay. Moonfall is stupidly simple and people really like that one. I don't know. There's something about like, I think these simple movies that like people are really appreciating, and Moonfall is a blockbuster movie. It's a mess, but it's like, it's so full of itself being a blockbuster that it really is just simple. The moon falls down. That is the movie. But it falls down in the most complicated and silly ways, where like the atmosphere is being sucked away, so birds are dying, but the birds still fall down to the earth even though the moon is above it. So the birds should be flying into the sky. I don't know. It's really stupid.
Sounds like a hit.
I know. Moonfall's great. I actually moved that up on my list because I keep thinking about how much fun I had in the theaters with that one. Both my wife and I, we really liked that one. Definitely going to own that one. But like, yeah. And then you get to Prey, where it's super simple, where it's just a survival horror movie where one of the scariest sequences is actually a bear tries to attack my protagonist. And then a predator shows up. And so like,
ooh, that poor bear.
I know. I really, really hope that there's a cut somewhere where he rips the bear in half. I was really hoping that that was the climax of that scene.
There's a viral tweet going around where someone's like, oh, it's a great movie, but you could have used more practical effects. Why'd they CGI the bear? And everyone's just like, and so people are like, yeah, you know, bears, they just can't hit their marks, you know? So you just got to CGI him.
Why couldn't they cast a bear in this movie? I really don't like that they're casting CG bears.
It's a whole show on Hulu, but they won't put him in Prey. I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
I've not seen the bear on Hulu. But yeah,
like the classic tweet. This is from the bear. I don't know. Haven't watched it yet. Birds of Prey. It's just a bird hunting a thing. I don't know. I haven't watched it yet. Yeah, I'm just fascinated right now by like this, and I'm not fascinated in like a, I'm better. I'm curiously observing. Like, no, because I'm in agreement. Like, these movies are really simple. Even RRR is super simple. It's just a bromance where they actually don't know that they're enemies. That is really interesting. So I'm really enjoying this return to high concept as opposed to just like, in a world where half of the population of the entire universe has vanished because of a snap, because of a villain who in the last 10 movies collected 5 power stones to do this thing against these villains and heroes that you also watched. Whatever. Get that out of my face. I don't want it. It's too much. I'm just really happy for this. And I'm waiting. I'm waiting for movie production companies to get back to just creating lower budget high concept things. Netflix is going to start doing this. They specifically said that they're not changing how much they spend money. They are just, which is stupid, but they are now creating a new division that creates like $10 to $30 million budget movies because they're seeing
like a movie studio. That's their like, big idea.
I know. Right. But they're observing that no other company is really doing that right now. They're either doing sub 10 million or like Blumhouse. They're basically they're creating a Blumhouse division
because you're either Blumhouse or Marvel Studios,
right? And like Blumhouse is doing the like I would say maybe 5 to 20 million, but like, and they're super successful. Like, it's crazy. Blumhouse is ridiculously successful, and I like their movies, even the stupid ones. Like, I think they're really fun. Ma is like, I still remember Ma. We still talk about Ma in this household. We are a pro Ma household. But like, these simple movies are really appreciated. They're, I don't know, I don't get exhausted after those. I have headaches after Marvel movies almost all of the time. But like, these movies, like, I don't know, I could still go throughout my day and like exist. I don't have to like recover from that. I don't know. I just said a lot about like the current experience of industry. What do you think about
it? I think
it
speaks to something where everyone's really excited about the prospect of a street level Marvel now. Like, that's what people are buzzing about. Like, oh man, She-Hulk
doesn't look good, but at least it's
more fun. Yeah, but like, they're bringing back Daredevil and they're making Echo show, and I don't care about Echo, but Daredevil's gonna be that too, I guess. And maybe some other people.
Before we recorded, they just released a another teaser, I guess, because they've learned their lesson with a full trailer for She-Hulk. And it has like the teaser is advertised as having Daredevil, but it's literally just like a cutaway where he turns around. Like, it's super quick.
And you see that he has the yellow and red suit now,
which looks cool. Like, I like the color.
It's interesting because it's the exact same like shape as the suit for the Netflix show.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Everything,
yeah.
They just change the colors.
Melvin was like, I got this new color scheme. Or he's being affected by the I just never remember the word for it, but the shipping issues right now, the market globalization, so he can't get the color paint. So he's like, I got this one.
Well, or Daredevil doesn't know, and he's waiting for someone to point it out. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, why are you yellow? Like, I'm what? You know?
What are you talking about?
I feel like everyone's made that joke already.
The biggest reveal that Melvin is colorblind. He didn't
Melvin's back. There's rumors about all these other people coming. But like, my point is, like, I think it's it speaks to the fact that people are like, oh, sick, just like a movie or a show where people are fighting criminals in alleys, you know, like people are not as jazzed about the whole like, what if there's a bunch of Kangs out there messing with the multiverse? Like, people are really, really, really hearkening back to a thing where they could just go to the movies and not have to worry about doing homework or doing research. Like, I would love it if we had hit movies that were like $40 to $50 million and they're just about a law firm, or they're about a spy, or whatever they used to make movies about. Like, I want rom-coms again. You know, like, not every movie needs to be an event. Like, everyone kept predicting that the bubble was about to burst, and I think it's affecting streaming, where like the idea that we can only pump money into like big event movies that where everyone brings all their friends and family,
like the Gray Man.
And so Prey, I think, and it's sad we're saying this about a movie that is the fifth in a long running franchise that has comic books and video games and stuff. But like, yeah, like the idea of like a movie about one person fighting a monster is like the big hit. But Prey was great. So yeah, I want more movies like it. I want more exciting, tense thrillers. I want more movies where someone just fights a monster and kills it. And I gotta say, I think Amber Midthunder is gonna have a bright future. I think
for sure.
People are already fan casting her as X-23,
in like what?
Wolverine's daughter.
She's already in Legion. Not that the canons are together, but she was in Legion for I think the three seasons. She is in two Liam Neeson movies, so I don't know how you want to take that, but she has a lead role in Ice Road. So there's that, and she's in brief role in Hell or High Water. She's got a couple other movies she's in. We haven't mentioned though, Dakota Beavers. This is his first movie, and he's the really older guy. He's the the older brother. He was really great.
He's one of the only other characters in the movie.
Right, but yeah. Exactly. And doesn't nearly have as much to do, but is also really great. So I hope to see him do more. And we really didn't mention this, but most of the actors are Native American or have Native American heritage.
I think all the characters that play the Comanche are all of Native heritage.
Yeah, and so that's pretty exciting to see that and to see it. I don't know, just good.
It's a nice cherry on top. Like, it's a good movie, and then like there's all these other little extra things to add.
But it's not the lead character's Tom Cruise, like The Last Samurai.
Yeah, it's not Matt Damon in The Wall or whatever. Right. You know,
which The Wall is interesting because it's a Chinese director specifically cast him because he said no one will see it if it's anyone else. So I want Matt Damon. But that's like the beginning of Matt Damon's career ending. Like, he could pretty much look at The Wall and move forward, and pretty much everything else Matt Damon's been in, except for maybe The Martian. Although I think that might have been before. Was not too good.
He's an actor that in any minute he could come back at something big, though. So.
I don't know.
Shed no tears after his commercial
where he told everyone to buy Bitcoin. I think that was like everyone publicly said no more Will Smith, but behind the scenes, everyone went no more Matt Damon. So I don't know. They're on the same list.
Where does this rank among the other Predator films for you?
My computer froze when I was writing my thoughts and pray for Letterboxd, but I was saying how I think one of the things Predator often doesn't get credited for, but we all mention, is that it's a very funny movie. Predator is super funny, and not just because Shane Black has jokes, but because everything else is really funny. Contact is funny. The kills are funny sometimes. The handshake is funny. There's a lot of really good irony, satire, comedy, really good stuff that makes it a good party movie. And I haven't even mentioned this about Predator, but my first time I saw this was in theaters. It was a special theater screening at, I can't remember where, but I went by myself. I had a blast. It was great. It was a pretty sizable theater. People cheered and stuff. So it's a really great crowd-pleasing movie. Prey wasn't really funny. It had some good comedy stuff, and it definitely has good crowd-pleasing cheers that no one's having because it's not in theaters. Maybe in this world of re-releases where Midsommar got a director's re-release, Everything Everywhere is getting in theaters again, and Endgame can get put back in with an unfinished Hulk design, maybe Prey will get its very limited screening, which I would love to see because I would totally get in theaters for that. But Prey, I think, doesn't get to have that party vibe, be in the sense that, like, you can kind of have friends over to watch it and talk over it and stuff. And I know that that's a really weird criteria to bring up for saying I think Predator's over Prey, which I don't even really need to excuse because it's the first one and it's very, very good. But, like, I really like when a movie's like that. And I think that when a franchise has a movie like that, that it can be that, it's a bummer to lose that as a quality. Prey makes up for that in style and in execution. And we haven't really talked about, like, the filmmaking of this movie, I think, but the movie looks really good, is edited really well, and it feels really good. A lot of people on Letterboxd are talking about set pieces, how just it goes from one set piece to the next that differentiates and gives style.
There is no fat on this movie.
It is. Yeah, yeah. It is. So we're going to be doing an episode of American Gospel Crucified in the future. And I had watched it and I talked to Dan saying one of the big criticisms is that it is one of the most bloated things I've watched in a very long time. And I saw the Batman this year. And so, like, Prey is, like, efficient filmmaking. It is really good, but I would definitely put Prey underneath Predator. I found Predators to kind of be an interesting movie in theory, but mostly a nothing movie. At the time, because I watched these movies years ago, I liked Predator 2, and I actually liked that. I joked about it, but I liked that Donald Glover is afraid of heights. I think that that's just a nice character touch to just building his character. I think it's silly, and I like that movie because it is actually pretty silly. When they have the fight, I think they fight right in a old woman's apartment. I can't remember. Yeah. It's silly, and it carries that from one. And then The Predator is, like I said, I mean, that is, the more I talk about it, the more mind-blowing it is as a film. So I wouldn't say it shouldn't have been made. I actually love that it's made because it's so ridiculous, but not in all the positive qualities. So Prey, definitely underneath one, but definitely up there because, like, it is what you wanted from a sequel for Predator. And so that feels really good. But what about you? Where are you feeling on this as the actual Predator fan, big fan?
It's
the Predator apologist.
I think that's a good rating. I think Predator, the OG one, I think it's going to be very hard to top that for a variety of reasons. The first Predator has some great action sequences. It has a great cast. You have the immortal lines from Jesse Ventura. You know, he ain't got no time to bleed. You have Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers with the greatest handshake of all time.
Yes.
It opens with a tremendous over-the-top John McTiernan action sequence, and then it becomes a horror film halfway through.
Is that the soundtrack? Super... That's the one that's like da 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 da. Which I don't think they evoked in Prey at all.
No,
I think it was
there's its own two shout outs in Prey. There's
the mud pit.
Yeah, the whole, like, mud pit thing. Okay, so three. There's that, and there's the fact that her brother tells her, if it bleeds, we can kill it. And then the fact that the flintlock pistol she uses and then gives to her mother is the flintlock pistol that the Predator gives to Danny Glover in Predator 2.
I was like, I'm pretty sure this is something. I was like, I didn't think this is a thing. That's good.
Which I thought was nice. You don't get a lot of references to Predator 2.
Which means we can get an Alien versus Predator versus Native Americans movie. That can happen, Daniel.
or we'll finally get Ash Williams in one of these crossovers. I wish that Freddy versus Jason versus Ash movie ever came together. That sounds
was
so
that
fun.
A thing?
That was in production for a long time.
That sounds so cool.
The Necronomicon is
Evil Dead Rise this year is going to have a Predator in it.
That'd be dope. Can you imagine Bruce Campbell versus Predator?
Dead-eyed Predators? Come on. That sounds so cool.
There you go.
But yeah, so initially there was plans for Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. It got turned into a comic book at a certain point. So
well, now I got to get this.
So I think Prey is right underneath, but it's like it's a great dichotomy where you have two movies that are very good for different reasons. They really complement each other really well. You get high tech soldiers in versus a no tech Native Americans but they have the superior skills. Both groups get mostly wiped out by the Predator by the end. Prey is better than Predator 2 and Predators, and I'm assuming the Predator because everyone hates it. And better than AVP.
You might watch the Predator and go, "This is the best one."
Just finally, what I've been looking for.
Because I know, like, we're both huge fans of like bizarre movies, and like that in itself, if it's bizarre enough, can become a best. And like this is true. Like please watch it this week. You've got to watch it this week.
I evoke this movie a lot because for me it's a gold standard of this is like Creed, where it combines all the things I like about the original, but reinvents and updates them for a modern audience while it respects the franchise while adding something really different to it. Where you could argue by in some metrics it is somewhat better than the original that comes before it. It doesn't quite capture the magic though. So it's very much like that, where I put it right up there with the best that the franchise has ever produced.
So with Fortnite, they come out with new skins for franchises to advertise it. But with the WWE, has there ever been a match where someone came out dressed as a Predator and then wrestled?
So not in the WWE. This is a very common occurrence in Japanese deathmatch companies in the 90s, where they would just have someone who was just, here's Leatherface. And it's just a wrestler dressed like Leatherface. Same with Freddy and Jason. So I think there likely was a Predator guy dressed like Predator at some point.
Okay, so that is above Predator. And then Predator is...
the obvious ranking hierarchy. Yeah. The only major company... So the Chucky doll has appeared in wrestling twice. In a moment of continuity, Chucky showed up at WCW to antagonize wrestler Rick Steiner. Rick Steiner's son, 20 years later, is wrestling the WWE, and they did a cross promotion with the Chucky show in USA.
Cool.
And Chucky came back and antagonized the guy's son again, saying, "I hope you're better than your dad was."
That's
and
awesome. Just, like,
this amazing continuity.
It's like really cool, like generational, like frustration. It's like JoJo. But like,
it's so dumb because it's not like the Chucky doll can wrestle.
Yeah.
Like Rick Steiner challenged him to a match, and we're just like, "What do you think you're gonna do, man?" And then the only other one is that RoboCop showed up in WCW in 1990.
They're gonna do a full CGI group of the dwarves in the dwarves movie upcoming, but we're just gonna have you wrestle one. It's Chucky.
Okay.
It's very progressive. The WWE. Now you can call it wrestling too. You could actually read the what the acronym is, but all right. Prey's good. Prey was pretty good. I liked it. And it was a blast watching with some friends talking about it. And so check it out. Of course, you already probably watched it. It's number one on IMDb. It is number one on Letterboxd right now, too. It is about to hit 100,000, which I don't even think Not Okay did that yet. So good thing we did this, I guess. Although Not Okay, I look forward to that episode because if you actually liked Dear Evan Hansen, you'll like Not Okay. But if you like the style of movie, then you'll like Not Okay. Dan, I texted you, it's exactly the same, but not bad. I hope you like it. Anyways, let's get into recommendations. What do you have to recommend, Daniel?
Okay. So for this week's somewhat more theological recommendation. I've been out and about a lot recently as I've been unable to really spend a ton of time in my office. We only recently, I know I joked earlier about not having air conditioning. We actually recently got the air conditioning fixed and I've been living in my in-law's house. And so I haven't been able to access my library as much as I used to. So I'm going to very quickly recommend two apps that I've been using that have been helping me out. The first is called Blue Letter Bible. It is a free app you can download in the App Store. It has multiple different Bible translations, but what's neat is it has built-in things like Matthew Henry and the Fawcett and Brown commentary right in the app. So if you really quickly need to look something up and get some intel on it, that's a good one. But if you're more into translations, the NET Bible app is tremendous. It has full translation notes right in there. So I'm not a huge fan of the NET translation itself. I think it's okay. But the translation notes that come with the app are
extremely helpful. Highly recommend those two things together. So those are my, that's my, I'll send links to Melvin so you can put them in the description, but I've been using those a lot lately.
I'm just going to recommend checking local independent theater listings, support local theaters. Me and my wife, we, checked out, and by local, I don't mean like Regal and like AMC. We like to keep up. We actually have a couple independent theaters in the area. There's one near us that's actually the longest running operating theater in the country, which is pretty cool. They actually just recently renovated over 2020. So it is going to continue to go. And they're having a Godfather special event. It's very expensive, but basically you do a special dinner at a really fancy restaurant nearby. So you get to eat like the Godfather, although it would have been just cool if they just did a spaghetti dinner, like the recipe you get in the movie, and then they'll be screening it. But independent local theaters do cool things like that. We last weekend saw Candyman in theaters, the original. It was awesome. What a surprise. And sometimes if you have a good theater, or you probably have a good theater, but if you have a good curator, they can also curate with local collectors or nearby collectors to special screen 35 millimeter prints of old movies, which always looks great and is beautiful and just feels good. And discussion with owning physical copies, it's also just cool to see old movies in theaters as opposed to streaming them or checking them out. And it's just nice. And our theaters nearby are doing things like almost every week. They're doing Lawnmower Man this week. And yes, I am definitely going to go check that out. It's going to be a good time. Nice. And so, which the tagline for the sequel to me just cracks me up. So check it out if you haven't seen it. But they're doing stuff like this all the time. They're doing Scream at 35 during October. So obviously I'm checking that out. I wish it was Scream 2. That would have been dope. But yeah, definitely check out whatever you got nearby. Maybe you're out west and it's a little bit harder, but I'm sure there's got to be some independent theater nearby because there's just cool stuff about it. You talk to people about movies. It's just more intimate and personal. It's more community than just going to like an AMC to watch whatever's big. And I just think that's exciting in a world of streaming where even streaming movies aren't reliable anymore to get more into your community. So yeah, that is my strange, weird, but good recommendation. Dan, you said you were going to recommend another Trachtenberg.
Yeah.
Which one? And, you know, recommend his Portal short film from 2011?
Which is why J.J. Abrams picked him up. And J.J. Abrams also owns the rights to a Portal film, yet he just hasn't put two and two together.
And Half-Life. I don't know why he hasn't done it. Like, why?
Maybe he's waiting for them to finally finish Half-Life so he can figure out the story. So good luck with that. Now, I'm going to recommend, some of you may be familiar with his previous film, 10 Cloverfield Lane, which, have you seen this, Melvin?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters. And I like the ending.
I do too.
Good. I think it's a good payoff.
It's the weakest part, but it also, it's kind of what makes it such a unique, interesting movie to me. Like, yeah, the tense thriller stuff is better, but like, I'm recommending it.
It's so tense because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yes. it's a perfect example of how to make a great sequel in a franchise without just doing the same thing over and over. So as legend has it, this was originally just a screenplay called The Cellar. Partially written by Damien Chazelle, of all people.
Oh, wow.
And so J.J. was picked up. And
the original version has more jazz.
It's just Ryan Gosling is trapped to everyone, making them listen to his takes on music. And so J.J. Abrams got the rights to the script and said, hey, let's make this a Cloverfield movie. And so we have Dan Trachtenberg. And he makes this wonderfully amazing, tense, people trapped in a basement thriller. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is our lead actor. Here is Michelle, and she's terrific in it. John Gallagher Jr. plays a guy who's there with her. But their true standout is John Goodman as the creepy, scary guy who is in there with him. So some sort of disaster is happening. Wink, wink. Figure if you know what's happening based on the name of the movie. And they all go to a bomb shelter, which is run by John Goodman, who's been preparing for the end times for a very long time. And so he has a fully stocked and furnished bomb shelter, including a large assortment of DVDs and VHSs, which he politely asks them to put them back where they found them once they're done. He's a very quirky guy. And there's just a slow building throughout the whole movie. What's going on? While there is some unknown disaster happening right outside. So the ending is very divisive. Melvin and I both like it. Some people don't like it because it is
tonally very different from the rest of the movie. But if you know it's coming, it's kind of neat to see it. So I personally found it to be fine. It's great. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is just wonderful in it. John Goodman is just the best at these sorts of characters.
Super good.
Really great. And so hence why I think Trachtenberg is just the king of taking installments in franchises you might not want, think you want, and then making them something you really love. And also Barry McCreary does the music, kind of like Barry McCreary. So 10 Cloverfield Lane. And if you have extra time, check out the other Predator films. Even the ones you heard are bad, except for the one I haven't seen, The Predator. I think they're probably better than you remember. So.
Thanks so much for checking out this episode of Cinematic Doctrine. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving a review and subscribing to the podcast. And as mentioned before, Cinematic Doctrine has a Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you're opted into a once-a-month movie poll where you decide a movie we discuss on the podcast. There are other unique benefits that come with supporting the podcast, so be sure to check that out at patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine. A special shout out to those who support at the Art House Theater tier on Patreon. Thank you so much, Mom, Dad, Melanie, Sherlion, and Thomas. You guys are the best, and your continued monetary support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, stay cool. Want some Cinematic Doctrine swag? You're in luck. We've got 3-inch Cinematic Doctrine logo stickers exclusive for Patreon supporters. Perfect for your travel mug or laptop. Head over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine, link in the show notes, and choose the independent theater tier. Doing so will net you other perks too. But let's be real, the podcast stickers are the coolest perk. So get yourself some podcast stickers by supporting on Patreon.